We consider what was read for us this morning from the book of James. We certainly recognize initially that what James is talking about is generally considered to be temptation. We need to understand that our temptations come in many and varied ways. Oftentimes, our temptations come not in the manner of something that, like candy to a child, or like pecan pie to me, but they come to us in a means that distracts us. Sometimes even in a means that brings disappointment. Things that we might think of as adversity. And so that's what we want to talk about this morning. We need to realize that many of our temptations are of a kind that make things difficult for us. Sometimes those are emotional things. Sometimes they are financial difficulties. Sometimes they're family squabbles, all sorts of things. But what they are is they are adversities we're dealing with that distract us, or at least serve to distract us, from what truly matters. And that is preparing ourselves for going to be with God for all eternity. When I think of this thought, in fact, in the past I have used the illustration, I don't know that it's common enough now for folks to recognize it, but way back when we had the wide world of sports, you know, when you got sports only at certain times and only on certain channels, and you would have the wide world of sports and you'd see the agony of defeat. Well, that's part of what we're talking about this morning. And I always see that image of the skier coming off the slope and falling. And some of us have to deal with things like that. They're a distraction. They cause us hurt and harm. They cause us grief. They cause us suffering. But what we need to recognize is there are ways for us to come through those things, to overcome such situations. And I think we can find an example in the life of David that will help us to overcome these things. Now, understand, we recognize and we look at David, and Brother John's been doing a fantastic job of pointing us to some of the things that David's been having to go through that were a demonstration of his faith in God in his Wednesday night invitations over the past several months. We've been on David for a while going through, and he's talked about others as well. But we also recognize that David wasn't a complete failure. He was a successful person. In fact, David had some very large successes. He was king of the nation of Israel. Here this little lad, the youngest of the sons of Jesse, of one of the smallest tribes of the nation of Israel, he was chosen by God to be anointed as king. And as he talks about some of the things that he endured, we recognize that he was a prosperous shepherd as a part of his family. And certainly we recognize David's success in defeating Goliath. But let's remember that David is not only an example of success, but David is an example of one who was able to come through adversity and still remain faithful to God. It doesn't mean it didn't distract him. It doesn't mean it didn't hold him back a little bit or cause him some trouble, but he was able to overcome those things. He had some very difficult defeats and adversity that came his way in various different areas of his life. He was anointed as king, but almost immediately, the current king, Saul, went about trying to destroy him. Certainly, the Psalms are full of discussions and discussions that David had with God and with himself and with others regarding his suffering and pain as Saul went about trying to destroy him simply because God had chosen David and rejected Saul. One of his difficulties that he had in life is he had a desire to build a temple and to do great and wonderful things for God. But he was not able to do that. God rejected him as a temple builder because his life and his dealings were full of war. And then, of course, the sorrow of losing the child involved in his sin with Bathsheba, the murder of Uriah the Hittite, all of those things that took place. Those were adversity, and certainly we look at that and we say, well, David brought that on himself, and this is true. But there are times of adversity. He was able to come through that and to bear up, continue to serve God. And certainly as we continue to look at the life of David, and this does not cover all of the things that had happened to David, and certainly there's a lot involved in this. Ryan, we've got actually chapters listed for these references here in 2 Samuel. He had the overthrow of his government, or his son sought to overthrow him as king and to take his place. And as a result, he lost his son. Rebellion that was led by Sheba that we read of there in 2 Samuel. And then another instance where he brought difficulty upon himself in 2 Samuel chapter 24. And we read there in verse 15 of that chapter that he caused 70,000 men of Israel to die from the plague, simply because he wanted to know how many warriors he had. Despite warnings that he was given that he should not do that. When we consider all of these things together, we recognize David suffered adversity for a number of reasons, and there are many of those that we can, as individuals, correlate directly into our own lives. We cause our own harm sometimes. How many of us that when we look back at a situation that we're in, we realize that it's because we decided to do this at this particular time? We get caught up in the middle of something and we recognize, you know, if I'd have actually listened to the advice I was given, I wouldn't be where I am today. And then, of course, those things that we can't control. The loss of loved ones. Children going away from the Lord. Financial struggles because we lost a job. All sorts of different kinds of adversity fall upon us as we go through this life. Similar to the things that David went through. Certainly, different circumstances, different society, but the principles and such still apply to us today. And we recognize that in all of these things, David survived. And when I say David survived, I'm not saying that David lived. Certainly David did live through these things and overcome these things. But what David recognized is that he continued faithful to God. Yes, he had stumbles, he had troubles, but he still served the Lord. He still survived. And as we read in 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 29, as the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life from all distress. David recognized it was not through his own power that these things took place. But just looking at David and seeing that he was filled with adversity and that he overcame those adversities and was able to remain faithful to the Lord and to continue to live his life, that's not sufficient for us today. We need to understand how, because we each have our own struggles and trials and difficulties that we deal with. I don't think there's a family in this congregation that doesn't have some kind of adversity going on in their life. In fact, be honest, I was thinking just this past week and thinking about this lesson and such, I thought, you know, I wonder sometimes if the very reason I'm here is not because there's so much adversity. Maybe some of the things that I've suffered and endured in my own life have prepared me to be here to help various ones in this congregation overcome. Now, that doesn't mean I think I'm doing a good job all the time, don't get me wrong, but maybe that's the reason, because there is so much adversity and difficulty to deal with. David gives us an excellent example of how to deal with such things. If you would, turn with me to the book of Psalms. The book of Psalms. And we want to look at the seventh Psalm. Psalm 7. Because there are a couple of things that David talks about in this psalm that I think are necessary in his overcoming these adversities that he dealt with. And certainly, I think that we can learn from them. And the first thing that we notice when we look at the Psalm 7 and the things that David has to say there, O Lord my God, in you I have taken refuge. Save me from all those who pursue me and deliver me. Or he will tear my soul like a lion, dragging me away while there is none to deliver. According to the heading in my Bible, this is a psalm that David wrote and sang concerning Cush the Benjaminite, who was chasing after him. But what David did here is he looked to God. And I think one of the first things that we need to do when we are dealing with adversity in our lives is look to God. David, as we made mention in 1 Kings chapter 1, acknowledged that it was God who had redeemed him and saved him from all his distress. And here he says, God, I want you to help me. When something comes upon you in this life, some struggle, maybe your mom's not doing well, maybe somebody passed away in your life, maybe somebody else is sick, maybe you lost your job or have to change jobs, or maybe all sorts of things. Where do you turn first? Who do you look at to begin with? Do you look to God? I know we can look at evidence and see that oftentimes when these sort of things happen, we reach out to those that are near us. We reach out to our family, to our hesitate to use the phrase church family, to our brethren. And we seek comfort. We seek help. Assistance, whatever it may be for us. Sometimes, because of the way that our particular society is set up and such, we search for assistance from financial institution for some particular financial problem, or we reach out to some agency or something or another to try to help us to overcome this. But what we see from David, especially as we look here in Psalm 7, and I think you'll see it throughout the Psalms as David dealt with adversity, it seems first and foremost, David went to God. And so I ask each one of you, when something goes wrong in your life, do you go to God first? If, as we talked about in our Bible class this morning, He's the one that you put your trust and your hope into, as I don't know how you pick songs, but songs go very well with some of my points this morning. If your hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness, why, when you have trouble, would you go anywhere in this world? Why wouldn't you first go to God? Yeah, I had somebody tell me one time, you're not supposed to use yourself for an example. But as I've told you before, I know more about me than I do about anybody else. And I look back at times in my life and some of the adversities and difficulties that I dealt with, and the first thing I wanted to do was find a way to fix it. I wanted to fix it. I can do this. And then there came that adversity that I knew I couldn't fix. And I knew that the only way to be able to go through that and to deal with it was to get down on my knees and pray and beg God to help me with that problem. Folks, if we're not going to God with our problems first, we're lacking in faith and trust in Him. He's the one. Go out on your social media sites and call all your friends and your neighbors and say, would you pray with me? But go to God first. Let Him know the desire of your heart. Let Him know your struggle. Because he's the only one that's going to help you survive for eternity. You may find somebody that will help you survive for the next hour or for the next few days. But there's only one arm that we can lean upon that is everlasting. And that will support us into eternity with God. We need to look upward when we are oppressed, when we're dealing with difficulty. When David came to the end of his life, we turn over to 1 Chronicles chapter 29. David came toward the end of his life and he was giving instruction to his son and he was talking about various things. And there in 1 Chronicles chapter 29 and verse 10 through 13, we read David's prayer. So David blessed the Lord in the sight of all the assembly. And David said, "Blessed are you, O Lord God of Israel, our Father, forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. Indeed, everything that is in the heavens and the earth. Yours is the dominion, O Lord, and you exalt yourself as head over all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you rule over all, and in your hand is power and might, and it lies in your hand to make great and to strengthen everyone. Now, therefore, our God, we thank you and praise your glorious name." Think of all the difficulties and struggles David had had in his life. The times when he thought he was alone and no one wanted him. Yet when he came to the end of his life, there was no bitterness, no hatred toward God because of what had been going on in his life all this time. He thanked God. Why? Because David knew he could depend on God. And he did depend on Him. But David also, we continue looking there in Psalm 7, had sense enough to look at himself. "O Lord my God, if I have done this, if there is injustice in my hands, if I have rewarded evil to my friend, or have plundered him who without cause was my adversary, let the enemy pursue my soul and overtake it. Let him trample my life down to the ground and lay my glory in the dust." Or we go back and read from 2 Samuel chapter 24. And there when he numbered the nation's army and all the people suffered, what was this cry out to God? "God, they didn't do it, I did. God, please punish me and not them." David was willing to look and say, "I caused this problem." Now sometimes he had to be prodded and poked a little bit. We all remember Nathan coming to him with the story about the little lamb and pointing out, "Thou art the man." But David listened. And he looked and said, "It is my fault. I did this." Not only do we need to look to God for the strength and help and guidance that He might give us, but we need to look at self and see if we caused it. And I'm not saying that everything that happens to us is because of something we did. I'm not even trying to say that everything that happens to us is because of some sin or involves some sin. Sometimes there's things that happen to us that we have absolutely no control over. But even then, we need to look and say, was there something in me that brought this about? We need to investigate. And when we examine ourselves and we realize that, yes, this was my fault, we need to be willing to make the change. But also, in looking at self, when we have to deal with problems, even problems that were not of our own making, we can learn. We can benefit. When we look at self, when things go wrong, maybe it's something that we had absolutely no control over, but we look and we say, okay, how do I deal with this in a manner that I am better when I get out? Of course, that should turn us to God, which we should have already done. But it can also help us to grow and increase. That's why we read from James chapter 1, And how James tells us that our trials and our tribulations are to help us to be better. The fire of trial tempers us, hardens us, makes us better able to handle the difficulties and struggles. One of the things, while certainly when we look through the Psalms, we sometimes see David with a little bit of an attitude of woe is me. We don't ever really see him wholly giving over to the idea that everybody's out to get me. There's nothing I can do that's right and everybody's going to cause trouble for me. I don't have any way to help myself or anything like that. David looked honestly at himself. Sometimes it led him to the fact that I'm a sorry excuse. But when it did, David said, how do I fix it? Let me set it right. David was willing to look inward, and that allowed him to survive. That allowed him to bear up and to overcome. Same attitude is demonstrated in the instruction that's given to the brethren that the Revelation letter was delivered to. You look to God for your strength and your faith. You make sure you yourself are right. And you will overcome. You will benefit. You will grow. There's a third thing that we want to consider this morning as we think about David and how he dealt with adversity and difficulty. How he overcame these things and was able to be the man that we see in Scripture, the example that we have set before us. And that's found in 2 Samuel chapter 12. 2 Samuel chapter 12 is the follow-up to the story of David and Bathsheba and Uriah the Hittite. All the things that happened in regards to that. And in particular, in verse 19 through 23, we are dealing with David after the child has been born, the child was sick, and now the child has died. And as we get started, I go to this passage to deal with this because it reminds us that we can't dwell on the here and now. We can't dwell on the past. We have to recognize the need to move forward. And this passage fits so well with some of the struggles that I see various ones in this congregation dealing with and that I have dealt with myself. If you read before verse 19, you recognize that David was fasting and praying to God. He wouldn't take anything to eat. He wouldn't let anybody bother him. He wasn't dressed in his kingly robes. He was bowing before the Lord in sackcloth and ashes, so to speak, begging God for the life of his child. And then the news that the child had passed came. And the servants who had been trying to get their king to eat, been trying to get their king to do anything other than lay there on the floor begging God, what in the world is he going to do if he's coming and that child died? He spent all this time praying to God that this child might live, that things might go a better direction, and now we got to tell him that God said no. But when David saw that his servants were whispering together, David perceived that the child was dead. So David said to his servants, is the child dead? And they said, he is dead. So David arose from the ground, washed and anointed himself, and changed his clothes. And he came into the house of the Lord and worshipped. Then he came to his own house. And when he requested food, they set food before him and he ate. Then his servants said to him, what is this thing you have done? While the child was alive, you fasted and wept, but when the child died, you arose and ate food. David said, while the child was still alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who knows, the Lord may be gracious to me that the child may live. But now he has died. Why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I will go to him, but he will not return to me. And the next few verses tell us he went back to his wife, comforted her, and Solomon was born. He moved on with life. What David teaches us in this is, yes, there is a time to mourn and ask God for help, but there comes a point at which we need to realize we've got to move on. We've got a life that we have to live in service to God. In all of this, it seems David still kept in mind those two things, the looking to God and considering himself. But he also recognized that there was a point at which there was absolutely nothing more that he could do in this situation. And certainly we look at this, and probably because of the experiences that each of us have had or are undergoing now, we think of losing someone. But understand, this same principle applies no matter what the adversity may be. Lost your job. Okay? Is it going to do you any good to go back and beat on the door and beg, please take me back? Is it going to do you any good to sit around in the house and mope and moan and complain? Or is the time come for you to get up off your seat and get out there and get busy finding a new job? Oh, woe is me. This happened. I lost this person. They were very dear to me. And I just can't do anything more in life. Folks, there comes a time, and I'm convinced it's sooner than most of us want to admit, that we need to just move forward. We got to let it go. Yes, I said let it go. We do. We've got to turn loose of it. Because all it's going to do is weigh us down. David could not accomplish anything as a king while he was there prostrate before God. But he still had some hope. And I want to emphasize that David didn't give up before hope was gone. He didn't just get up and go on about life because God said this child is going to die. He tried. But at some point, we've got to say, this isn't going to make any difference. Maybe that means at some point, we've got to turn loose of our children. Turn loose of our friends. Because all they're doing is keeping us from being the servant of God that we need to be. For someone, that may mean it's time for me to put less emphasis on my husband or on my wife. Because they're keeping me from serving God. Is that a happy thought? No, it's not. Is that something we want to think about having to happen in our own life? No, it's not. Not any more than we want to think about losing someone to death. Or losing our home. But sometimes we need to recognize it's time to move forward. We've got life that we have to live. We've got life that we have to engage in, and we have to conduct ourselves in those things. We can't sit and think, life has just treated me so unfair. I never get the good breaks. Everybody's against me. Everybody hates me. No. And we need to certainly make sure we don't try to go through life with the attitude, nothing bad's ever going to happen to me because I'm a good guy. There, I can show you a few examples of other people besides me. Because I'm not so sure, but what a lot of what happened to me was because I wasn't a good guy. We need to get up and move forward. Part of that process, part of what's involved in that, is looking for a way to benefit from that adversity. David, when he was being hunted and chased by Saul, he didn't go sit in the wilderness somewhere and do nothing. He went about the business of defeating the enemies of Israel. Even to the point of tricking some of the enemies of Israel into thinking he was fighting against Israel when he was actually destroying some of their own comrades. David didn't go to Ziklag and hide. He went out and fought against the enemies of Israel, as we read in 1 Samuel chapter 27. He was told by God, "I don't care what you want, David, you can't build my temple. You're a man of war. You can't build my temple." But David didn't just kick back in his throne and say, "Well, God won't let me do what I want to do, and so I'm not going to do anything." No, we read in 1 Chronicles chapter 22 how because he couldn't build a temple, you know what he did? He gathered all the things that were needed for building. And by things needed for building, and I'm talking about all the timbers, all the rocks, he gathered gold and silver and iron and brass and the artisans that were needed in order to put it together. And he said, "Solomon, here it all is. Now, God's going to let you build it. But here, I'm going to take my time and prepare these things for you so that it's ready when your time comes." When Israel had 70,000 destroyed in the pestilence because David had counted the army, we read in 2 Samuel chapter 24, David took and built an altar to God. An altar of reminder, I'm convinced, of stepping outside what God says ought to be. There's a lot of those through the Old Testament, by the way. Or to look at a New Testament example, consider the Apostle Paul as we read in Philippians chapter 1. And he talked about his imprisonment and how some might look at it and think that this is a defeat. This is a problem. He says, "In my adversity and my imprisonment, the gospel is going to spread. Maybe I can't get out and preach it like I would like to, but there are others who are made bold because I'm in prison for preaching the gospel, and they're out there preaching the gospel. There are some out there who look at me and say, 'I really don't like Paul, and so I'm going to go out and preach the gospel so that they'll cause more problems for Paul.'" Paul says, "Guess what? I rejoice that the gospel is preached and spread." To use a more common phrase, Paul took his lemons and made lemonade. He learned from adversity. He grew. He used it to help himself move forward and to help the cause for which he had sacrificed his life, that he held so dear within his heart. We can learn. We can use adversity to help us. In fact, adversity is something that can, as James tells us, adversity is for our help. Of course, sometimes what adversity is there is to remind us that we're maybe not who we think we are. Sometimes it's to knock us down a notch, to use a more familiar phrase to some of us. It humbles us. As Paul spoke of in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, we read there of his discussion regarding the infirmity or the thorn in the flesh that he was given by God to remind him that the grace of God was sufficient. To remind him that he wasn't perfect. Sometimes adversity comes along and what we learn from it is, I'm not so good as I thought I was. Of course, we need to learn from that. Paul, in this instance, learned that what he needed to do was put his trust in God and depend upon God and let God be the one that receives the glory not himself. Maybe the reason that someone is in some major financial trouble is because they got too big for their britches, thinking they can take care of themselves, and they need to be reminded that this world is not my home. I'm just passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. Maybe they need to be reminded that we need to put our trust in God. And I seriously emphasize that maybe. If nothing else, maybe that's the lesson we ought to learn from it, no matter why it may have happened. Maybe that's how it helps us, to remind us to depend upon God. It also helps us grow to maturity, and that's what's talked about there in James chapter 1, verse 2 through 4. In particular, he's talking about temptation, I understand, and trials of our faith. And we understand trials of our faith can include adversity, as we've been talking about this morning. It helps us to grow, to reach spiritual maturity. Every time we are stressed, it can lead to strength. We see that in the physical world with the weightlifter or the runner. They stress their bodies to build their strength or to build their endurance. They push them just a little bit. They do things that normal people don't do, like get out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning to go run 5K, however long that is. And that makes them stronger. In fact, most of them start out with a lot less than a 5K. But it helps us to grow and to increase, and we can use adversity for that purpose. In fact, James tells us that's why it's there, it's to strengthen us. Every time we deal with something, it helps us to be better to deal with something else. And, as we made mention of in our lesson last Sunday, it helps us to help others. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 3 through 7. We looked at this last Sunday. In fact, my wife pointed out I had 1 Corinthians last Sunday, and it's supposed to be 2 Corinthians. I hope when you went to check my scriptures, to search the scriptures to see if what I taught was so, you picked up on that. But Paul says we use the comfort that God has given us in comforting us in our sorrow to help others deal with their sorrow, to comfort them. Adversity can help us prepare to help somebody else. We need to learn how to deal with adversity. That there are ways to deal with adversity that make us stronger and bring us closer to God and bring us closer to our brethren. And if we want to overcome adversity, we're going to have to put time and effort into developing these sort of things. And I'm convinced that the greatest help that we can possibly have, no matter what our adversity may be, is first and foremost to remember to look to our Lord. In Hebrews chapter 4, Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14 through 16. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weakness, but one who has been tempted in all things as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. The greatest action we can take to deal with adversity, no matter what the adversity may be in our life, is to look to Jesus for help. And we need to acknowledge our own self, what part we may have played or may need to play. And then we need to move on. It does no good to overcome the wall if we stand just inside of it or on top of it and don't go any further. I was thinking about that just now. I thought, you know, we had a lesson about the city of Jericho not too long ago, and how the Israelites overcame those great, powerful walls that were protecting that city. But that city wasn't defeated until they walked in. We overcome the trials and then we move forward. We're trusting God we can do that. No matter what our situation in life may be, God, through Jesus Christ, can help us. We need to recognize our brethren who want to help us also. And that's why at the close of every service, we make this offer, this plea, this call. If you've got anything in your life that's not right in the sight of God, or that is keeping you from serving God as you want, we need to help. If it's sin that needs to be repented of, we ask you to repent and pray and ask God to forgive you. And let us help you to avoid that temptation in the future. If it's pain and suffering, if it's grief and sorrow, if it's adversity, pray to God and ask Him for help. And we're here to pray with you and for you, so that the effectual, fervent prayer of many righteous men and women can work for you. Your situation is such that it needs to be set right publicly. You need prayers from the congregation. You want to ask for them. Opportunities provided for you. Our goal is spiritual life, to be with God for all eternity. And if anyone needs help with that, here you come, always standing in the center of the church.